love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
I gotta do right before they call me home.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is June 15th, 2011. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have Miss Sonia Stem. And Sonia's going to tell us a little bit about her life growing up, getting through abuse and different situations, domestic violence, different things. So tonight's going to be about violence, domestic violence, things like that. So stay tuned. It's going to be an awesome show. And let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, I just want to say hello to everybody out there in Radio Land and our viewers that tunes in every Wednesday night. I also want to thank our guests for allowing us to, you know, bring on the show and speak what she needs to speak and touch someone's life, you know. So without further ado, we'll bring on right now so she can formally introduce herself.
Hello, my name is Sonia Sims. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I was originally born in Shreveport, Louisiana. And I am very honored to be on the show tonight.
Well, we thank you for joining us. And, you know, we know that you're here to share a very tough story with us. But we know that you're here also so that you'll be able to reach out and help other young girls or women who are maybe going through the same situation. So let's go back and start at the beginning. And as you told me, you never knew your father and that your mother was a crack addict.
Right.
You were kind of raised out on the street. So let's go back there, you know, maybe back to your early childhood and talk a little bit about what you went through.
Okay, well, my early childhood, we were living in Portland, Oregon, and my mom was married to my brother's dad. My mom has two children, me and my brother, and we lived in a domestic violent home. My stepfather, he would always fight on my mom. I think he worked for like a railroad train station or something, but he was hardly at home. But whenever he came home, you know, the fighting would begin for whatever reason. We were real young. My brother was like maybe one, I was maybe four, but it was very scary. You know, just listening to the sounds, listening to my mom scream and yell, you know, knowing that my stepdad, which I thought was my father at the time, just, you know, listening at him, you know, hit on her and things like that. She would send us down to the neighbors, you know, so we wouldn't, you know, when the arguing would begin, so that we wouldn't be around for that. But you know, one time I came back and I actually witnessed him choking her and hanging her head out of the window. And I thought he was going to throw her. I thought he was trying to throw her out of the window. And so I started screaming. And, you know, he stopped. But, yeah, we grew up witnessing that. Very scary.
You had a brother and any other siblings?
No, just me and my brother. And, you know, I always felt like I was his protector. I would go and get him, and we would go in the room sometimes, and I'd just rock him. My mom had a rocking chair in the room, and I would go and rock him. You know, I was scared, he was scared, but I was trying to comfort him.
Well, at 4 years old, you were trying to be the protector of your little brother.
Yeah, and you know, I still feel that way, that I'm his protector.
Still his protector. Now, as we go on, you said that at about 4 years old, well, you were living off in that situation, but around the time maybe you were six, seven, or eight, somewhere around that time you remember being molested?
Yeah, see, my mom, she's been on drugs. She's addicted to crack cocaine. She still is. And, you know, she's been on drugs as far as I can remember back. You know, being a child, you don't know that your mom is on drugs. You don't know the reason, you know, that, you know, you're going through the things that you're going through. But we lived a very unstable life. We were always living, moving from here to there. And, you know, and when this molestation took place, we actually, my mom had left my stepfather. And we caught the train to California to live with my aunt. And it was a time when my mom, I guess she was clubbing, you know, hanging out with her friends or whatever. But we were left at one of her friends' house where the friend's oldest son was our babysitter. And he would come in the room, you know, and I know this because it happened. I felt someone rubbing, you know, on my vagina when I was asleep. And when I woke up, he went out of the room. And so, you know, I tried to, you know, I didn't say anything to my mom at that time when it first happened. But what I did was the next time she went out, I didn't go back to bed in the room. I was afraid to go back to sleep. And so I made a pallet on the floor in the living room, and I laid there and I played sleep. And as I was playing, you know, while I was playing sleep, he came down to, you know, try to do that again. He was pulling the covers off me. And at that time, I grabbed the covers and I moved like I was waking up. And he went and jumped back on the couch. So then I knew that it was him that was doing that to me. And so I did tell my mom, and you know, he never kept us again.
Wow. Now, was your stepfather, was he on drugs or an alcoholic? Or do you know what made him so angry, or just the control?
Well, I think they were drinking back then. I don't remember, but when I saw pictures of us when we were young, you know, I saw beer bottles around, like on the dresser and stuff like that. And, you know, like I say, my mom is still on, she's still addicted to crack cocaine, so she won't even talk about, you know, that stuff. She won't even talk about the past.
Wow, and she's still addicted.
Yeah, she's still addicted. She's been addicted to crack cocaine as far as I can remember. She's been some type of a drug as long as I can remember.
Hard life. Now, you know, you've gone through so much abuse, and you know, we want to let everybody that's listening know that if you're going through something like this, get help, talk to somebody. You know, we'll give you some outlets here in a little bit. We'll give you some websites and some phone numbers. But, Sonia, did you feel like you had anybody to go to at that age?
No, I didn't. You know, at that age, I really didn't even know who I was. Like I said, I never knew my biological father. I found, when I did find out that my stepfather was not my father, I was maybe 7, 8 years old, and that's when my mom told me who my biological father was. But at that time, she told me that he had been killed. And so, you know, we didn't even go to the funeral or anything like that, but that was the first time I ever remember feeling resentment towards her, feeling anger and resentment towards her, because I felt like she kept a part of my life from me. You know, she kept something from me. She had me believing that this one man was my dad, and to find out that he wasn't my dad, but that my real dad had been killed. You know, he was deceased. And so, you know, I believe that was the first time when I really felt like a part of me, you know, was missing. I didn't know who I was, and, you know, because we were always moving around, and when I say moving around, I mean from state to state. I was born in Louisiana, we left Louisiana, went to Portland, we left Portland, went to California, left California, went back to Louisiana, went back to California, back to Louisiana, then back to Texas. You know, we were always moving around, very unstable. I don't remember having too many friends, you know, because, you know, we always moved and went to new schools and stuff like that. Maybe got settled around, 12, 13 years old here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And we made Dallas our home. But things were still very unstable because we moved from apartment to apartment, you know, living with people and things like that.
Right. Now, was your stepfather still with your mom at this time?
No, because she left him. When she left him in Portland, Oregon, she never went back to him. So
okay.
That was the last time we had saw him I guess for over, oh, we were adults when we saw him again.
Okay. So you're young teenagers, just with your mom, and your mom going through all the stuff she was going through. So you're a young teenager, and you say that you almost got raped and that you eventually got into some teenage dating abuse, and you actually got pregnant very young. So tell us a little bit about how that happened.
Okay, well, when we moved here to Dallas, like I said, I was about 12. Maybe in the fifth grade, maybe 11, but I remember being in the fifth grade when we lived here, when we moved here to Dallas. And I remember seeing my mom in a room with a whole bunch of people. And the room was so cloudy that I couldn't even see, partly, you know, because the room was so cloudy. But as I think back, you know, they were in there doing drugs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a lot of the pieces to the puzzle, I put it together once I got grown, once I became an adult and looked back over my life and began to write my book and everything. But my mom was still on drugs. She was I guess the drugs had taken over her life by the time I was 14. We had lost our apartment. She lost her job. And my family from Louisiana came to Dallas get my brother and I, because my mom had left us. She abandoned us. And when my family found out about it, they came and got us. But by that time, I had a boyfriend when I was 14 years old here in Dallas. And, you know, I was talking to him every day and everything. But anyway, he ended up buying me a bus ticket. I ended up coming back here to live with him and his family in Dallas. And that was, he became the father of my first child. I was 15 years old when I got pregnant. And I was 16 years old when I had him. But even with my mom not being in my life at that very young age, my aunt was, she was like my guardian, but I didn't live with her. I still put myself through school because I always wanted to be somebody in life, even though I didn't have that teaching, even though I didn't have the molding, you know, from my mom, because she was, you know, strung out on dope. I always wanted to be somebody. It was always something inside of me that wanted to be someone, even though I was a pregnant teen and, you know, and had a child at a young age. I did graduate high school. I put myself through high school. I got my first job when I was 14 years old and pregnant. I worked on the weekends, bathing dogs and cats, worked at a dog grooming shop. And I bought my own school clothes I put myself through school, but it was very hard. I was very lonely. I was very ashamed because, you know, my mom was on drugs and you know, I felt that I was less fortunate. It was a lot of things that I didn't know, like about personal hygiene, a lot of things I didn't know because those are things your parents are supposed to teach you, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely recommend if you're getting through high school, because going through what you went through, and we haven't heard the whole story yet, you went through a lot, and to not have at least a mom or a close aunt or older sister, somebody to be able to talk to, and gosh, you know, I just can't imagine what you went through, but I commend you for getting through that and finishing high school on top of all that. That's
yeah, I wasn't even
awesome,
thinking about college.
Awesome. Exactly. You say that when you were, that you almost lost your life to teenage dating abuse.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay. When I was about 17 years old, I was maybe it was about 16. I was a junior in high school. I had started dating this guy. He was a senior in high school. He was real cute. I mean, he was one of the guys who all the girls wanted in school. He was a straight A student, and you know, he was real cute. He had his own car, and which, you know, at that time, hardly any guys had their own cars. He, I don't remember him working, but I know he had a house, which his dad, his grandfather was in the real estate business. And so he had his own house. He's very independent, you know, very different, didn't really hang out with a lot of other guys. So he wasn't really popular. He was just real cute, like he was the cutest guy in the school. And you know, and everybody, all the girls liked him. You know, he was a new guy at the school. And so me and him started going out, and, you know, it was something really creepy about him. You know, as I began to date him, I didn't pick up what it was at the time. But, like, for instance, we went to a park. He wanted to go to a park and talk. Well, the park that we went to, it wasn't a park that was out in the open. It was a creepy-looking park that was, you know, in a place that was very dark and dim and looked like nobody even went to the park, you know. And he sat in the car, and we were talking, and then he started crying. So, you know, I'm just saying that because the guy he turned, you know, it was things about him that I did not pick up on. And so, but I ignored that, you know, I felt sorry for him. That's what it was. I felt sorry for him. And so, you know, we continued to go out, and eventually I ended up moving in with him, me and my son. I had a son at that time. So we ended up moving in with him. And once I moved in with him, that's when everything began to change. I found out this guy, he was very, very jealous. He didn't want me looking at anybody. He always thought that, you know, that guys were looking at me. You know, he would do real crazy things to scare me. He liked to scare me all the time. And some of the things that he would do is, like, when we were in the car, we're going somewhere, he would just start driving really fast and driving dangerous, where he'd be speeding in and out of, you know, swerving in and out of lanes and cutting people off. And he knew that that would scare me, and he would look at me and laugh. That's the kind of creepy guy that I'm talking about. And, you know, other things that he would do is, like, we're in the car and we're at a light. And if a guy, you know, look at me, he look over in another car. And if a guy's looking in our car, he'll roll the window down and he'll cuss the guy out. What you looking at, you such and such, such and such, you know. And he was very jealous and very possessive. And, you know, it's not that I ever thought that was cute. I always thought this guy had a problem, but at that point I was afraid, and I wouldn't dare tell him, you have a problem. You know, something's wrong with you. I wouldn't dare say that to him. Living with him, I found out he was an alcoholic. You know, the reason for his tears, his dad was an alcoholic, and his dad was very abusive to his mom. He grew up in a domestic violent home also, where you know, he would witness his dad fighting his mom. And though his parents were divorced, I guess that trait had trickled down on him. And, you know, we would even be sitting in there watching TV together, and he would say crazy things to me, like, you know, are you, what you looking at that guy's penis for? I know you're looking at him, you know, at the television. I mean, this guy was real. I mean, and nobody would have ever thought that he was like that because of how he was at school. Remember, I said he was a straight-A student, very likable, very impressionable, you know, but behind closed doors, he was a monster. And he began to be abusive when his brother moved in the house with us. He would accuse me of sneaking in the room with his brother, and things that he would do to me, he would grab me by my hair, he would pull plugs, and he would just hold my hair until he pulled a plug out of my hair. One time he had me looking for some shoes or something in the closet, and he slammed the closet door on my head, and I had a big knot in the behind my ear from where he slammed that door in my head. I mean, and then he started selling drugs. And when he started selling drugs, he bought guns. Mm-hmm. And he would put a gun under my pillow, you know, to try to threaten me because he thought that I was very popular in school, pretty shape, pretty girl, very young and innocent. I didn't have a lot of boyfriends. You know, if I had a boyfriend, he was my boyfriend. And at that time, the guy, Jason is his name, he was my second boyfriend that I ever had in my life. But he always thought that I was cheating on him. And, you know, he was just very insecure. And he would put these guns under my pillow, try to threaten me. And, you know, I'll never forget one time what he did to me. He jumped on top of me, and he started saying, let me see what you would do if somebody would try to rape you. And he started acting like he was trying to rape me, and he was prying my legs open. And, you know, I had heard a rumor in school that he had raped somebody before. I didn't believe that. I thought it was people trying to break us up. But when he did that to me, I kind of said to myself, yeah, see, that probably is true, just because of how he had my hands and how he was prying my legs open with his legs, and he had my hands. He was holding my hands with his hands and prying my legs open with his legs. And so, you know, he was just very, very abusive, real crazy. I mean, he would say things to me. He would do things to me. When he left the house, he would lock me inside the house. We had burglar bars all around the house. And the burglar bars, you had to lock them with the key. You had to have a key to unlock the burglar bars, or else, you know. And when he left, he took the key, and he would lock me in the house where I couldn't get out. And, you know, it was just crazy stuff like that he would do. Very abusive. I mean, he would even choke me and do things like that to me in front of his friends.
Now, you say that you used to sell crack and marijuana. Was that because he was selling it, or was that before?
Oh, that was long after him. Yeah, that was long after him. And even after him, I had got in a relationship with another young man who was a drug dealer. And he was the one who taught me how to cut up crack and, you know, how to sell weed and things like that. And so I basically did that as a way of making more money. By that time, I had 3 children. And I did have a full-time job, but, you know, I just wanted more money. I wanted more money. And at that time, I was just, you know, tired of dating guys and being used by guys, and I just felt that I didn't really need nobody else. I was going to be all by myself. I was going to do this, you know, on my own. I'm single. I don't need no man. And so, you know, that's around the same time I worked at strip clubs. I had a full-time job working from 11 to 7. I would get off at 7. I would go work the strip clubs at night. On my job on Friday, I would sell my weed at the park on Fridays and make my money from that. And, you know, on the weekends, I would sell a little bit of crack. You know, I wasn't this big-time dope dealer, but I sold nickels and dimes. I would buy 50s, and I would cut it up and just sell little nickels and dimes. You know, and I did that to make money. You know, I wasn't ever trying to be, you know, this big bad person, this big, you know, dope dealer. Oh, I got this, I got that. No, I did it to survive. I did it to feed my children. You know, I did it to keep a roof over our head. You know, I was on Section 8, and I wasn't getting food stamps at the time, but like I said, I did it to try to basically try to keep up with the Joneses, you know, to have the keep up with the latest fashion. And I didn't want to depend on the baby daddies, you know, to help me with the kids. They weren't paying child support, and so I did what I had to do to survive, to take care of me and my children.
And was that you said that you used to be known to steal $8 to $1,000 worth of merchandise in the mall every week?
Yeah, I put $8, but I meant $800. Yeah, $800 to $1,000 worth of merchandise. Yeah, I used to steal from the malls. You know, me and a couple of friends, we would go hit up some malls and steal clothes. And, you know, some we would wear, some we would sell. And like I said, you know, that was a hustle. You know, when you're living that kind of life, you're going to find a hustle. You know, any kind of hustle where, you know, you can keep up with, you know, with the latest fashion. You can keep some money in your pocket. You know, we were doing the club thing. We were clubbing at that time and, you know, just hanging out and, you know, just doing what we did. And, yeah, you know, but I eventually got caught. And thank God I didn't do a lot of time in jail. I spent maybe 2-3 days in jail, and I bonded out. And, you know, I had my little 5-year probation time on that. And I left that alone because I knew jail wasn't what I wanted.
Right.
I found that out real quick.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
and, you know,
I appreciate you being so honest about everything because, you know, we know that there are a lot of young women that definitely go through all of these things and more every day. And, you know, we really appreciate you coming on and telling your story. And I just want to give out a couple of numbers here. We want the teenage girls to definitely know that you know, if your boyfriend is hitting on you or beating on you or just trying to control everything you do, who you hang around with, and just kind of trying to keep you isolated, that, you know, that's abuse. And, you know, abuse comes in different forms. It can be physical, verbal, emotional.
Right.
You know, there's so many different types of abuse. But, you know, get away. And if you need help, you can call the Teen Dating National Hotline, and that's 1-866-331-9474. And for the regular National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-7233. Or 1-800-799, the word is SAFE, S-A-F-E. And then we also want to give out the website for the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network, and that's www.rainn.org. So that's rainn.org. And definitely we want you, if you're going through something like that or know somebody that's going through something like that, you know, try to find some help. And before we go on, I'm going to go ahead and hand the mic over to Rob and let him talk to you for a minute.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. You know, like I said, we're glad to have you on the show tonight. And I just want to say we definitely hope some youngster is listening to this message. It's a very positive message that, you know, anyone can change. They just have to want to change and keep the creator first. So I really commend you for changing your life and doing something, not only helping yourself, but giving back to help others. So I commend you on that. I want to go into this for a minute. Yes, you're welcome. You got involved with other crimes. Touch upon a little bit about, you know, the pimps and the gangsters and the hustlers that you was involved in, and your friends and families at that time.
Yeah, well, they became my friends and my family because, you know, that's who I knew. I say the streets raised me, and I tell my children that to keep them from, you know, trying to run to the streets for this and for that. But, yeah, the streets raised me because my mom didn't. You know, the guys, you know, I mean, they taught me how to use what I have, you know, to get what I want. And that was basically manipulating me and, you know, basically selling your body, you know, because, you know, the men, they wanted the sex. And, you know, and so they were taught, I mean, I was taught, hey, you got, you know, you got what they want, you know, go get your money, you know, get your money. And so, you know, I'm not ashamed of that. You know, I wouldn't say that I was a prostitute or anything like that, but, you know, I learned, I learned how to conversate. I learned how to get money. And, you know, I didn't have to sleep with all of them, you know, to get money from all of them. But some of them you do, you know. Some of them you want to sleep with. Some of them you don't want to sleep with, you know. But, and you know, as far as the pimps, when I worked in the strip clubs, you know, it was pimps in the strip clubs. When I moved to the projects, that was the first time that I had gotten my own apartment or whatever. But I lived in the projects, and living in the projects is a total different life. You know, I mean, it's like a community within itself of the things that goes on. And living in the projects, you know, that's where I sold the dope. And so, you know, I knew the drug dealers. You know, I knew all the drug dealers. I knew, you know, all the pimps working in the strip clubs, you know, and they were cool people. They were people just like me, people who were hurt, people who mamas and daddies was on drugs and mamas and daddies was in the pens, and they were looking for a way out, you know. And you know, just even with that right there, us having just that in common, not that we knew that about each other, but it had to be something that had us out there like that. You know, it was something missing that had us out there like that. So, you know, we would find common grounds, and we became friends. A lot of us became friends. A lot of us, you know, we would club together and just hang out together. I hung out with more men than I did females because females was always jealous. And not that they was jealous of what I had, but they was jealous of who I was because, see, after a female goes through so many times of being used and abused by men, they're going to learn the game. You know, you start picking up bits and pieces from every person that you've been with, you know, and then eventually you're going to turn that on them. Well, they used to use me, I started using them, beating them at their own game.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And exactly, yeah. And so, you know, and that's how it was. You know, I just began to manipulate them. you know, like they used to manipulate me.
And that's the worst thing in life is to have somebody to know both sides of the coin. You know, that's like both sides of the knife is sharp, you know. So it's always good to know both sides of the coin because, you know, nobody can fool you. Nobody can put a wool over your eyes because that's what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Right. After going through that so many times because the wool was pulled over my eyes many times, you know. I mean, I'm not going to say I was gang raped, but, you know, I done had been in situations where I thought it was just me and this one guy, you know, was having sex, and then here come his homeboy, you know, and then here come his other homeboy. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I done been put in situations like that. But, bam, what I do, you know, I didn't fight against the prick. I just learned a lesson not to put myself in that situation again. Because if mama don't teach you, if you don't, you know, your parents don't teach you, somebody going to teach you.
Amen.
And that's what I tell people today. You know, that's what I tell young girls today. You know, I even talk to the young men. Everybody have something on the inside of them where we want to belong to something. And if that is not fulfilled in the home, it's going to be fulfilled somewhere, and it's going to be fulfilled in the street.
Amen. And I say that all the time when I go out and speak to the youth, and I just say that in general. To people, you know, if it's not being taught at home in the beginning, because everything should be taught at home because that's where the building started at home. From the time you're born until the time you're able to go out here and take care of yourself, that means the parents is teaching you right from wrong. So if you go out here and make a mistake, you can fall back to what's right. But if you only know what's wrong, that's all you're going to keep continuing on that wrong road.
Right.
So we definitely commend you on that right there for learning that. You know, the hard way sometimes is the best way, and it's a way that we definitely learn more than we would have learned if we stayed neutral, you know what I mean? So God was with you, and, you know, he's blessed you to come this far, and he's going to bless you to keep moving farther. So we just want to say, what advice would you give you know, these youngsters out here?
You ask me what advice do I give them?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Basically, you know, these youngsters out here, I look at them, you know, the young women and the young ladies, I look at them, they have 2-3 babies, they 14, 15, 13 years old, you know, and, you know, I have teenage daughters myself. I have a 20-year-old son. And my son, unfortunately, he had to come out. You know, he wanted to go out and experience it, and I couldn't contain him no longer, you know, because he got rebellious and everything, and I just let him go.
Right, let him do him.
I let him do him, but see, he's locked up right now writing me letters. Mama, I thank you for everything you taught me, for, you know, being here, you know what I'm saying, for being here by my side. You see what I'm saying? He's seeing that these streets don't love you because that's what I teach my kids. I share my life experience with them. I don't hold nothing back from them.
Amen.
And I'm the same way with the youth in my church. I'm the same way with my children's friends. You know, I don't hold nothing back. I share my life experiences. I did this. I done that. You know, hey, I used to do this. You know, they get caught doing, I used to do this. I used to do that. But you know what? You're going to end up in jail, or you're going to end up in the grave. And I tell them that's not the way you want to go. I tell them, baby, let me tell you something about the streets. I say, the streets don't love you. The streets don't mean you no good. And that's what I tell them. I say, you'll get out there and you'll get killed. You will lose your life in those streets. Trying to follow the streets because that's not where love is. And I understand that you don't get love at home and that, you know, you out here, you know, you got to make it. Because, you know, that's the mind frame that they have. I got to get the same mind frame we had. I got to do what I got to do, you know. But my thing was, I was lonely. I was alone.
Yeah.
I was afraid. You know, I was this, I was that. I was trying to survive. And that's what I teach my kids. The life that I live, I didn't choose that life. That life was handed to me. You see what I'm saying? And I was trying to survive that life. That's why I did the things that I did. If somebody had stepped in and said, don't go that route, you know, if I just had somebody to warn me, but now nobody warned me because everybody was doing the same thing. You see what I'm saying? Everybody that I was with was doing the same thing.
Right.
And so now I look at myself. I look at the kids and I say, well, they like me. If somebody could tell them, then maybe they would do something different. And so that's why I tell them, that's not the life that you want to live. Ain't nothing out there in that. You know, these guys ain't going to love you like that. They're not going to give you what you're looking for. But your identity is in Christ Jesus. A lot of the girls don't know who they are. I didn't know who I was. I was whoever somebody called me a bitch, and I'm fitting that. You know, I'm the bitch. I'm whoever they call me. You know, oh, you're a player. Okay, yeah, I'm the player. You know what I'm saying? I didn't have an identity. I didn't have my own identity. I didn't know who I was. I was lost out here. And that's the same way that a lot of our children today are. They're lost out here. Same thing going on. Ain't nothing new under the sun. They mamas and daddies is on drugs and in the pen. You see what I'm saying? They're going through the same thing that we went through.
It's a recycle
game. That's right. But God is raising up people. And I learned through God, by God telling me, because I used to question God, why did I have to go through all this, all that? God said, you didn't go through it for you. You went through it for somebody else. So if I went through that for somebody else, that I could help somebody else, that's what the mission that I'm on today, to help somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason
Amen.
I tell my story.
Amen.
To help somebody else.
Do you have a website that someone can go to? We would like for you to give that out to the viewers.
I sure don't have a website, sir. All I got is an email and a phone number.
Okay, if anyone wanted to get in touch with you for anything, you can give them out your email as well.
Okay, that'll be fine. You ready?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay, my email is S as in Sonya _ Moore, that's Moore, Sims, Sims, at yahoo.com.
All right. And if anybody would like to speak to Sister Sonya, please definitely don't hesitate to reach out to her and email her. And, hey, it's all about each one teach one, reach one, you know. And we're going to go to a commercial, but I'm going to pass the mic over to my missus in a minute. But we'll go to a commercial and be right back with Miss Sonya.
I went to a party one night. We were all snorting lines, and this guy came up behind me, and he, like, said, hey, let's go back here. I know what we can do. And he grabbed me, and I was already high, and I got raped. My name is Jen. I'm 15 years old. I started doing meth when I was 11 years old. Kept saying no, and he wouldn't stop. And I just kind of cried afterwards, and he gave me an 8-ball, and I just said, okay, that was worth it. And then that's when I started selling my body for meth. I know a lot of my friends said, you're going to get addicted really bad and real quick, and I just kept saying, no, I'm not addicted. And it kind of just turned out that I wanted it every day. And I did really stupid things. I sold myself. And I stole from people. And I cheated people. I don't know anyone who's quit using meth after they've tried it a couple times or just once.
Brought to you by the Meth Project.
Yes, and welcome back to the Streets Don't Love Back radio show. With Miss Sonya, and we'll pass the mic to the missus.
All right, thank you. And, you know, that commercial probably hit you, you know, brought a lot of memories back to you as well. And Sonya, I just want you to maybe touch on that for a little bit, talking to the teenage girls and boys. But, you know, these things really happen out here to, you know, to girls, and drugs have a lot to do with it, being, you know, in the wrong place at the wrong time, guys hooking girls up on drugs and them not even knowing about it until it's too late. You know, can you give us some stories of maybe some things that you saw and things that really happen out there?
I had a lot of friend girls, and not even friend girls, but girls that, you know, would even worked in a strip club with me. They lost their lives. They were killed, raped, left for dead in creeks. I even saw guys who were killed. They were shot, left for dead. I mean, you know, I saw them just laying there dying, waiting on the ambulance to come and get them. And they died before the ambulance got there because the ambulance was scared to come to the project.
Right.
I saw so much, you know, and that street life is real. It's real. It's hell. You put so much energy in that street life, trying to keep up. It's a competition. Everybody's trying to be the baddest. Everybody's competing to be the best. Everybody's, you know, and I mean, everybody's competing to be the top dog, the big dog, the one with the most money, the best dress, the best hairstyle, you know, the cleanest, you know, the one with the most ladies, the one with the, you know, the female with the most niggas, you know, or excuse my French, but guys, you know, I mean, it takes a lot to keep up, but it's not worth it.
Right.
It's not worth it.
Now, how many girls out there? Go ahead, finish, and then I'll ask you.
You know, I was going to say to the young girls, if you would only know your worth, you're so valuable. You're okay. So beautiful. You're so valuable that, you know, God created you in his own image. You know, and I'm not trying to preach, but I can't leave God out of it. He made you in his own image. If you would only know your worth, you know, I know you may not know who you really are, but your identity is in Jesus Christ.
Amen. That's right.
It's not in the drugs. You know, I understand you hurt. I understand, you know, your mom is strict. Your dad is strict. I understand your parents don't love you. I understand your parents don't care. I understand your parents, you know, they don't love you. I understand all that. But God loves you. Jesus loves you. You don't try to find love in weed, in marijuana, in cigarettes, in alcohol. Love is not there. Only death is there. That's what's there, death. And the enemy is not going to tell you that until it's too late.
Right. So how can we get to the young girls that may be going through what you went through and they don't realize that yet? And we don't want them to have to go through everything you went through for them to realize like you did. I mean, how do we find out and get to those girls?
I can find out just by talking to them. You know, I don't even have to talk to them. I can sit by them and listen to the conversation that they hold.
Right.
You know, I can find out what's lacking in their life. And that would prong me to begin to minister to that young girl. A lot of times, you know, with the girls in my church, I just look at them and they'll start crying. Because I'm not looking at them, but I'm looking deep in their soul, and I see hurt and pain, you know, and I see a lot of girls ashamed. I mean, I was ashamed that my mom was a drug addict. I didn't want anybody to know that. I was ashamed for people to meet my mom. I was ashamed for my boyfriend, you know, to meet my mom because of how she looked. She was skinny. I mean, they would automatically know that she was on drugs.
Right.
You know, and a lot of girls and guys are going through the same thing. I mean, it was times where, you know, when I sold dope, I gave my mom dope because I didn't want her going out in the street to get it.
Right.
So I would give it to her. She could, Mama, if you could just stay at home, I'll give you this, you know, to keep her from going out in the street because I know don't nobody respect the dope scene.
Right.
You know? And so to the young girls, I don't know. It's just something about them, you know? I don't know if it's the familiar spirit or what, but it's just something about them that you can spot them, you know? You can spot them. I mean, even if it's, the ones with the 2 and 3 babies, you know it's a problem right there. If you're a teen, if you're 13, 14 with 2 or 3 babies, you know it's a problem right there. It's something going
right.
on.
That's right. Now, in your experience, how many girls did you see out there because of their bad situation versus girls that just run away from home to think that they're going to have better out there and be out in the clubs and stripping and out in the street life?
Well, you know, when I was 14 and my mom had abandoned us and you know, I came back to Dallas to live with my teenage boyfriend at that time. I ended up leaving his house because he was cheating on me and stuff while I was pregnant, and I was living with I just lived with different people, you know, like my friends who I went to school with. It was, hey, Asher, Granny, can I spend a night tonight? You know, and I ended up spending 2 and 3 nights. Or I would go crash out at my aunt's house sometime. Or, you know, this one lady, she took me in. I used to babysit her daughter when she was, when her daughter was a young girl. And I was young, too, but she remembered me. You know, when she, you know, let me come in, I told her my mom was, you know, where she was and on dope and everything. But see, a lot of these people knew my mom was on dope, but I didn't know at the time, you know, until I was abandoned and all that kind of stuff like that. But I didn't really know too many runaways. I wasn't a runaway myself. And I didn't really know of too many other girls who were runaways. We didn't really know each other's business like that. We went to school together, and, you know, and that was that. I mean, we hung out together.
As far as the girls that were pimped out, we know that a lot of girls that are runaways, you know, get caught in that cycle. Are you familiar with how that goes down?
As far as the girls that run away? No, I'm not familiar with that cycle because, you know, when I was a young girl that age, I didn't know of any girls that had run away from home. You know, like I say, I had my issues and I was ashamed, and probably didn't nobody even know that I was going through what I was going through because I didn't talk about it.
Right.
You know, I didn't talk about it, but, you know, now looking at girls that run away from home, you know, I don't know, but back then I wasn't into it. I tell people today I didn't have to run away from home. I didn't have to sneak out of windows to go see boys and stuff like that. My mom was a crackhead. She didn't care what I did.
Right.
You know, she didn't care what I did. I did what I wanted to do. I had my boyfriend, we slept in the living room on the floor. She go in and out the house walking, stepping right over us. You know, she was on her thing. So I didn't go through all that, you know, the sneaking and all that kind of stuff like a lot of girls do, you know, being rebellious and stuff like that.
Right. Now, during your teenage years and all the abuse that you were going through, you ended up also having a couple of abortions. Can you talk about that a little bit? And you know, maybe after the abortions you felt guilty, maybe you didn't. We know that girls go through all kinds of emotions. Maybe the circumstances of, you know, what made you feel that you had to do that and how you felt and how you feel now.
Okay. I wasn't a teenager when I had my first abortion. I was in my early 20s because I had my first son when I was 16. And 5 years later, I had my daughter. I was in my early 20s, and a little bit after she was born, I had got involved with this guy. I was living in the projects and was messing with this guy. He was one of the big-time dope dealers over there, and he had already had a baby mama with 2-3 kids and everything. And, you know, we were creeping or whatever, but I had got pregnant by him. And so I went to him and I told him that I was pregnant, and he said, "By who?" And, you know, by him saying "by who," that made me feel like he thought I was a hoe. And
right.
So I didn't argue with him or anything like that. I just went on and I had an abortion. And the reason why I had an abortion was because I did not want to have a child and, you know, for my child not to be denied, for my child to be denied by the father. I didn't want to go through that. I didn't want to put my child through that. He wasn't trying to be in a relationship with me. We were just screwing around, and that was that. I felt bad about it. I did feel bad about it. I cried, and I cried because I had never had an abortion before. It didn't dawn on me that I was actually killing a life, but I guess it was just rejection. I felt rejected by the father, and
right.
I believe that was the reason for you know, the tears and stuff like that. But after it was over, I bounced right back, and you know, I continued to do the things. Now, the stupid thing about that was after I had the abortion, I continued to sleep with that same guy who denied me, but that tells you a lot about my self-esteem at that time. And I wasn't a teenager. Mm-hmm. I was in my early 20s, and I still had very low self-esteem. Very low self-esteem. Right. I still didn't have an identity of who I was, how important I was, my value, my worth. You know, I was just going with the flow, just going with the flow. And that was the first abortion. And the second abortion I had, I was in a relationship with another guy, and I had already had two children by this guy, but I was cheating on him, and I got pregnant. I didn't know who the baby daddy was. And so I had another abortion. And I had that abortion because I didn't know who the baby daddy was. And I just didn't want to go through all that. You know, I didn't want to go through, you know, telling this. You know how you have a baby and you say, oh, it's your baby, but it's not your, because I had been done like that before by my mom. And I didn't want to do that to, you know, to one of my kids. And so I knew how it felt to be lied to. And so I aborted that baby simply because I don't know who the father was. The feeling that you have when you have an abortion is not a good feeling at all. Even to this day, I still count. I've been pregnant 8 times. I have 6 children that are born. But the two children are the aborted children, and I still count them. I still think about them. I still, every year that my children that are alive have birthdays, I still say, you know, I would say, well, you know, I would have had one this age. It's just something that I would never, ever forget.
Right. It is, you know, you go through a grieving, I think, on that day because you remember, or, you know, that even though it might be the day that you abort them, but that's the day I think that you think of because they were,
right.
You know,
because
aborted.
They were in
so
the, yeah.
You're supposed to get them with a birth,
right.
Right.
And they were inside of you.
Right, exactly. I am going to turn the mic over to Rob again for a minute.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. And I'm loving the show tonight, Ms. Sims. And like I said, you know, we just, very gracious for having you here and spreading your message. And I would just like for you to touch up on a little bit what made you start changing your life around and wanting to not only help yourself but make a difference.
Well, you know, with everything that I had gone through and everything that I had been going through, the mind frame that I had was that this is me, this is who I am, you know, this is the life I live. But even on the inside of me, I've always wanted to be a better person. I just didn't know how to be that better person. This guy who I call my godfather, which he used to be on drugs too, and he used to be on drugs with my mom. But he had got saved, and he knew our life story. He knew our history, you know, because my mom, we had been knowing him ever since we've been here in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got saved and gave his life over to the Lord, he came to witness to me. And it wasn't that I wanted to be saved. I just didn't want to go to hell. And I thought that as long as I wasn't killing anybody or hurting anybody, that I was okay. But he had told me different. You know, he told me that I had to be saved in order to go to heaven. I had to give my life to Jesus and ask Jesus to come into my life and to forgive me for my sins. And so I did that. I did just that. I confessed Jesus as the Son of God, and I asked him to come into my life and to forgive me of my sins. And I went on. I continued to work in the nightclub. At that time, I had quit my day job, and I became a full-time stripper in the clubs. And, you know, my life hadn't begun to change because all I knew was, hey, I'm saved now. You know, I'm going to heaven. But it wasn't until I got a phone call from my aunt, and she, you know, talked to me a little bit, and she told me to start reading my Bible. And it wasn't until I started reading my Bible that my life began to change. And, you know, as I read my Bible and I read the Word of God and I read things that told me the truth, you know, it's like blinders just started coming off my eyes, you know, about the truth. And that I remember feeling that, hey, there is another way to live, because the life that I was living, I thought that that was the only way to live. You know, that, like I said, as long as I wasn't hurting anybody or anything like that, I was fine. But the Bible taught me different, that there is another way to live. It's a holy way to live, and it's a righteous way to live. And so, like I say, as I began reading my Bible, that's when my life started to change. God started delivering me from the drugs that I was using, the alcohol that I was drinking, and, you know, He started delivering me from just that way of life. It wasn't an overnight thing either for me, you know, because I didn't know the Lord. I didn't know what was happening to me. You know, I remember asking God, why are you doing this to me? What are you doing? And why are you real? And, you know, I went through all that with God because, you know, I always knew that there was a God because, you know, I wasn't raised up in the church or anything like that, but I always knew there was a God. I used to go to church when I was little. We would get on the church bus that would come in the apartments to pick up all the kids and stuff like that. So I knew there was a God, you know, but I didn't know anything about Jesus.
Amen. I think we got a caller on tonight, and we're going to try to get a couple callers in. And the last four digits is 1690. Yeah, you there, caller? You on the air?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, you know who this is, Tony? I mean, I'm sorry, Robin Lucinda. I be on so many shows. Robin Lucinda,
hey,
Lisa. Hey, I'm in the Bronx, in the hood.
You're Jack. Yeah, we wanted to see if you had to ask Ms. Sims any question, anything tonight.
Yeah, I do. I want to know, when you said you found God, but God is always with us 24/7. So we just, when everything gets tough, because I've been in your position, a whole lot of your positions, and I have to tell you, I give you mad respect. I give you love. And I know, like, it's not easy. It is definitely not easy. But we come up. We definitely come up. And when we come up, and we just do what we got to do. And at the end of the day, we lay down, because guess what? We can lay our heads down because God's with us.
Right. Amen. Amen.
Exactly. But, y'all, I had to call in tonight. I'm calling in from the cell. You already know I'm in the Bronx right now, so my phone be sometimesy. But I miss this show. I really do. And I'm going to try to be on here every Wednesday night like I always do. But I'm up in the Bronx right now from Atlanta. How y'all doing?
Oh, everything is good. You know what I mean? God is blessing in the blessing business. And we just thankful of having Ms. Sims on the show tonight, and we appreciate you calling in as well. And we're gonna come right back to you, and we're gonna go to another caller, 6574. You there, little bro? Six five seven four, you're in the house, you there? Okay, we'll go back to the main line. All right, you there, Ms. Sims?
I'm here.
All right, we're going to go to our song, and we're going to come back with Ms. Sims tonight, and we have a great, great show tonight. Stay tuned in. Be right back.
Yeah. We're back at the top of the hour.
Yeah,
W-A-E-N-J. We got a very special guest in the house. Sexy. Slim Goody. About to sit down and poly a little bit. Do a little ghetto talking, you know? Slim, tell me something.
From AZ to double O, high
the way we triple and double the pile of the bubble. But I stay low, subtle and fly. No cuddle, no cry, I'm good and fly. These brothers acting hard, but they shut and shy. I'm hitting casinos like casinos from Cincy to Reno. We see re-ups, you see repos. Your G'd up, but your G-slow. Baby, be easy like a free throw. You're cheesy and me no need no hero. My needs real, you placebo. Negro, you ain't first, that's where my seat go. You better believe, bro, I can believe my enemies bleed more. I'm second watching trees grow. My peeps like where them trees go. I'm spinning that cheap flow. It's my way like DK and Khalid. I'm with his car, not where he go. At the bar till he be on zero. I got money and power of the veto. Your paper got your sour, show like you DeVito. I'm pulling strings like you the bass, and I'm the Tito. Ghetto queen leaning, hey. With my ghetto team we creaming up. Hey. Ghetto walk, ghetto talking the ghetto, we be gleaming, okay. Living. Triple beam dreams giving, lift to the fiends chilling. Riff with them things so next to my hips and my jeans. Ghetto queen leaning, hey. With my ghetto team we creaming up. Hey. Ghetto walk, ghetto talking the ghetto, we be gleaming, okay. Living. Triple beam dreams giving, lift to the fiends chilling. Riff with them things so next to my hips. From nothing to 10, 10 to 20, y'all be something getting got. We be bumping, getting plenty, then puffing the piff, sipping the Henny, Slimby, setting the trends. Y'all be bending for the trendy, yeah. Love for my kin, send death to my enemy. The drought got you sick, this slim got your remedy. Boom, got juice like Duke, got energy, shutting you down like Duke, the synergy. Slimby, putting the Simply Queen of the Cincy, lean back.
All right, and welcome back to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. We're here tonight with Miss Sonia Sim, and we are listening to her story tonight. She's gone through a lot in her life, and she's overcome a lot in her life, and she's here tonight to tell you that anything is possible. Sonia, can you give us a few more examples of things that you went through to maybe tell the girls out here what to stay away from, what to watch out for as far as different situations?
You know, I know there's a lot of teen dating abuse going on. That's one thing that I really like to talk about with young girls, because it's still going on right today. And not only that, that was one of the things that almost took my life. What had happened was, you know, I told you how he would lock me in the house when he would leave. And he had to have a key because there was burglar bars all around the house. But I was snooping around in his brother's room one time, and one morning, I was snooping around. I really wasn't even snooping around. I was looking for something. But I opened up the curtain, and I saw this knob, like a little button or something on the side of his window. Well, I pushed the button, and the burglar bar popped open. And it popped open on the outside. Hmm. And I remember thinking to myself, should I get out or should I stay? Because he always told me that if I ever left him, he would kill me. And I didn't know. I was afraid. Right. But what I ended up doing was jumping out that window and running. And I ran, and I ran, and I ran 5-6 blocks to my aunt's house. And I remember telling my aunt, don't tell him. I never to see my family never knew that I was going through this with him. But when I left him, I told my aunt, don't tell him where I am. Please don't tell him that I'm down here. And after him calling, I guess, I know it was about 2 weeks later, I woke up in the middle of the night. I felt something in my room, and it was him. He was standing over me, and I jumped up.
He was in your aunt's house?
Yes, he was in my aunt's house. My aunt had let him in. Well, my mom let him in because my mom was there, too. My mom let him in. And he had been looking for me because he was calling the job. He was calling on my job. I work with my aunt at the little dog grooming shop. He was calling the job, you know, trying to talk to him and everything, and I would tell my angel to tell him that I'm not here. You know, I'm not here. Don't know why I never even got the answer to why. I never remember asking the question of how he got in the house that night. I believe my mom let him in, which we need to keep in mind, she was a dope fiend. She was in and out, you know, in and out the house. You know how they do. They're in and out the house all through the night. So she probably didn't even know what was going on. But I know I told my auntie that I did not want him to know where I was. But anyway, I felt something in the room with me. I woke up, and it was him. He was standing over me. So I jumped up. He wanted to talk. I got up because I had my one-year-old son at the time. He was sleeping with me. And I told, and it was dark. My room was pitch dark. And I told him, I said, let's go in the living room and talk so we won't wake up the baby. And so it was in the middle of the night, maybe 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And so we got up and we walked in the living room. And we were talking. We sat on the couch and we were talking. And he got up and walked to the door like he was ready to leave. And I was behind him, you know, going to close the door behind him. But we hadn't opened the door yet, but he pulled the gun out. And when he pulled the gun out, before he can pull it up to my head, as he was lifting his arm up to pull it, to point it at me, I screamed and I grabbed his arm. And he had his back up against the door, and I was standing in front of him, and I had my hands on his wrist. And when I screamed, my mom came in. She ran into the living room. And I screamed, I told my mom, he got a gun, and he's trying to kill me, he got a gun. And my mom, she picked up the vase off the table, and she came towards him. She had the vase in one hand, and she had her other hand around his neck. And she was telling him to drop the gun, you don't want to do this, you know, this, that, this, and that. He wasn't saying anything the whole time. He was drunk, of course. He had left the club, and that's all I know. And so when my mom had her hand around his neck and she had the vase up, he still had the gun in his hand. He wasn't saying anything. And my one-year-old son had woke up and came around to the living room. And when he saw my son, I didn't see my son because my back was turned towards that direction, but he saw my son. All of a sudden, he just dropped the gun. When he saw my son, and he went down, and he began to cry. He was always crying, and right. So he began to cry, and my son knew him, you know, as dad. He lived with him, and he held his hands out, and when he dropped the gun, my mom picked up the gun, and she was telling him to get out, and he was saying, let me see my son. And so my son went to him, and he just held my son. And, I mean, he just held my son. We didn't know that he had a friend outside waiting on him in the car. And so after that little episode, he went on our side, got in the car. We didn't have a phone in the house. Mm-hmm. The police wasn't called. But after he left, me and my mom, we walked down to the corner and called the police on him still. Eventually, mm-hmm. He was picked up. I tried, and even after that, I pressed charges, but I tried to drop the charges. And the state picked the charges up, and they still picked him up eventually. So he did go to jail for that. But what I want to tell young girls about teen dating abuse, it's like you said, a man don't have to put their hands on you to abuse you. If he's putting you down, if he's telling you things like nobody else wants you, if he's telling you things like, that you ain't all that, you know, if he's putting you down, that's abuse.
Right.
If he's manipulating you, you know, if he's saying things to hurt your feelings, that's abuse. You know, it's more than one way to be abused. And him, one way that he would abuse me was to scare me. He loved to scare me, even with the driving crazy. and jumping in front of cars like he was going to do a head-on collision, and then at the last minute he'll get out of the way. You know, that has a long-term effect on you.
Right.
Because even 2-3 years after we had broken up, and I would see him in a club, I would dodge him because I was afraid of him. And, you know, I tell young girls, all right, if a guy is trying to manipulate you, if he's trying to tell you what to do, if he's trying to boss you around, you know, even if he's play fighting with you, you know, nowadays they play, they like to play fight. No, because play fighting turns into real fighting. He's testing you. He's trying to see what you're going to take or what you're not going to take. He's trying to see what you're going to let him do and what you're not going to let him do. That's abuse.
Right.
That's not the one for you.
Right. Trying to keep you away from your friends and going out.
Oh, yeah.
And doing,
oh, yeah. If he's picking your friends for you, if he's picking your friends for you, that's not the one for you. Yeah, that's not the one. If he lied to you one time, that's not the one for you.
Right.
If he slept with your best friend, that's not the one for you. But, you know, because our girls have such low self-esteem, we accept anything. We accept abuse, and we think abuse is love, because that's how I was. I was so messed up. I thought if a guy didn't hit me, he didn't love me. I thought if he didn't choke me, he didn't love me. I thought if he wasn't jealous and wasn't possessive, he didn't love me. If a guy wasn't tough and all, you know, he was a punk to me. You know, if you couldn't fight, if you weren't tough and you weren't talking crap and stuff, you was a punk to me. You was weak to me.
Right.
You know, that's how twisted we are. That's the kind of stuff that the streets teach you. You see, the streets teach you that, you know, the streets will teach you that you have to have, you know, this bodyguard type of guy. You have to have this Romeo type of guy. You know, I mean, there's just so many type of guys out here that we fall for, that the young girls fall for. You know, and it's all a bunch of crap. Because one thing I found out, Ms. Lucinda, is that these young guys, they just as messed up as the young girls are. They're looking for a way out, too.
Right. And the young guys driving the fancy cars and wearing the nice clothes aren't always as nice as they seem to be and appear to be.
No, they're not nice at all. They're looking for a way out. They're hurt. Their mama's on crack. Their daddy's in the pen. You know, their daddies were pimps, you know, and taught them how to be pimps. They're second, third, fourth generation of pimps.
Right.
You know, I mean, I didn't know my dad, but I found out a lot about him. He was a pimp. He was a drug addict, and how he lost his life at a dice game. He won a dice game, and when he got up to walk away, somebody shot him in the back of the head.
Wow.
You know, and the girls, you know, we just don't know what to look for in a guy. And that's one thing I never learned. My mom never taught me the type of guy to choose, the kind of guy that was a good guy. You know, I didn't go for the respectable guys, you know, the proper guys. I didn't go for those kind of guys. You know, I went for the guys that, you know, that had the money. I went for the guys that, you know, like I say, that was tough, that was, you know, I went for those kind of guys. I guess because I wanted somebody, and that is one thing, I wanted somebody to protect me. I wanted to feel protected. I wanted to feel, you know, I wanted to feel protected.
Right.
So I went for these gangbangers. You know, who would.
More that, and going back, it seems like that's the only kind of guy you ever really saw in your life.
Oh, yeah. I never dated any. I never dated any. I'm going to tell you, I never dated a guy that went to church. You know, I only dated drug dealers. That's all I knew, drug dealers and, you know, guys that live that street life. Because that's what I knew. You know, that's what I knew, the street life. And I learned that at a very early age, you know, even when I think back right now, I remember this guy. I was 14, 15 years old. I remember this guy. I was probably younger than that because my mom was still here. I would say I was even 13. Yeah, I was about 13 before I met my first real boyfriend. This guy, he was a twin. And he used to tell me that he was 15. I was 13. He used to tell me he was 15. You know, this guy used to try to, what he would do was he would buy me shoes, tennis shoes. Go out and buy me tennis shoes, and he would give me money and stuff like that. And, you know, and eventually he tried to have sex with me. And, you know, he was too big for me. I don't know any other kind of way to put it. He was too big for me. Come to find out, you know, and when I look back on this, I used to wonder why my mom never came looking for me. I would be out at 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and I would be with him. But she would never come looking for me. You know, whereas other times I had to be in the house at dark, you know. But, you know, come to find out he was a drug dealer. I knew he was a drug dealer. I knew he sold dope. But come to find out he was giving her dope to see me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But I didn't find that out until I was a whole lot older, you know. I was, like I say, putting pieces of puzzle together. Because I remember one incident, we were out in the little playground area, whatever, and she saw me sitting by him. Normally she would get mad when she see me with a guy or with a boy or whatever, you know, and make me come in the house and stuff. But no, she knew him. I didn't even know she knew him.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, you know, and like I say, you know, it was the dope. It was the drugs that she was on. She didn't care. She didn't care.
And how's your brother?
My brother, he's paranoid schizophrenic right now.
Wow.
I've been on the phone all week long with mental health people. You know, trying. I'm just gonna have to have him committed because paranoid schizophrenic. He got involved in the gangs and smoking whack. You know, I used to smoke whack too, but he had a whack attack and he was never the same.
Wow.
He was never the same.
Yeah, these kids don't realize what the drugs really do to your brain and inside of your body.
Yep, and then what they don't realize is that it only takes one time.
It only takes one bad hit.
That's right.
Yeah, one time. Exactly.
That's right.
You kids gotta stay away from the drugs and games and abuse and all of that. Just get away from it.
Yeah, just get it. Don't even start.
That's right.
Don't even start. Watch the people that you hang with. That's what I tell my children. Watch the people that you hang with. And,
right.
You know, and it's just hard when you don't have parents at home to teach you. A lot of kids have parents at home, but the parents just aren't teaching the kids.
Right. Right. You can have parents there, but they're still not doing their job. Or they're
not doing their job.
They're living in their own little world. You know, and that's why most kids do that have parents get involved in gangs and drugs in the street life, because they're still, you know, they're not getting that nurturing, loving, belonging feeling at home until they find it out with the gangbangers and the drug dealers to, you know, make you feel like they love you and care about you.
Right.
And it's all an illusion, but at that time, that's how they're made to feel, that, you know, that they're important, that they belong somewhere.
Yep. Because one thing I learned about being in the street is that hurt people hurt people.
Right.
Right. Hurt people hurt people. And the friends that we, you know, that we think are our friends, you know, in the streets, they're hurt people just like we are. You know, they just come from a different path. You know, we all have on the same shoes, but we just walk in different paths. You know, You have to be careful. But when you're out here in the street life, it's like you don't care. I mean, man, it's crazy out here. It's like you're driven by a force, and it's a demonic force.
Right.
You know, it's a deceiving force, and it's not telling you what's really going on. I mean, come on. We tell the kids all the time, you sell dope, you either going to end up in jail or in the pen. You think they care what they say? ain't scared to die. I ain't scared of the pen.
Right.
You know?
It won't happen to me.
Huh?
Or it won't happen to me.
Yeah, or it won't happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a deception. They're being deceived until it really does happen. And so, you know, too, I just try to talk to the kids because I want to change their mind is what I want to do. If they're thinking about it, I want to change their minds. If they've already done it, if they've already had a baby, you know, I want to talk you into not having another one. You know, I want to remind you of everything that you've been through. You know, I want you to trust me that I know what I'm talking about. You know, and not to say just because it happened to me that it's going to happen to you, but no, just to let you know that it happened to me and that kind of those kind of things do happen. You know, me being pregnant at a young age, you know, not using protection, you can get pregnant. It can happen.
And it only takes one time, too.
And it only takes one time. Yeah, and it only takes one time. But if you've already had a baby, it's okay. You know, it's okay. You've been there, you've done that. Let's not do it again. Let's do something else. You know, what are you doing in school? You know, what are your plans for the future? You plan on going to college? You know, you plan on being married? You know, what about you being saved? What about God? Is God, what does he mean to you? Is God real to you? Is Jesus real to you? You know, these are the kind of talks, and, you know, and the talk varies with the person, you know, with each person. When I minister, when I talk to these young ladies and these young men, I try to meet their needs. I try to meet them where they at. I try to see the need. I try to see where they've been, what's hurting them, what hurt you. I don't ask them that because eventually it's going to come out. Because if I be point blank, what hurt you, who hurt you, they're not going to say it. You know, but if you go around it, it'll come out. Some may be bold enough. Some may be mad enough to say my mama hurt me. Some may be mad enough to say my daddy did it. My daddy molested me and my mama didn't care. I kept telling her that it happened, that he was doing that to me and she didn't care. You know, some may be bold enough to even, so how do you minister to someone like that? How do you encourage, you know, a young lady that's been raped and molested by her dad or someone in the family? I don't know. I just embrace them. I hug them. I cry with them.
Right.
I'm sorry that it happened to you.
Right.
You know, but you can't live on. You have to forgive. Not saying you have to forget it, but you have to forgive them in order to go on in your life. You'll be okay. Yeah. Everything will be all
right.
Right. You're not a bad person.
I think the hardest thing for girls to deal with, and I was abused as a child as well. So, you know, you go through the feelings of guilt and shame, and we think it's our fault, and it's not our fault. And we have to come to the understanding that it's not our fault. And
that's right.
Get through that, and I would say, you know, try to say forgive myself, but it's not my fault. You know, it's the shame, I guess. And we have to be able to get through that and, like you said, to forgive. Not forget, but forgive.
Right.
And move away from that type of situation. And above all else, too, if you're being abused, I mean, young girls, children, whoever, or if you know somebody that's being abused, you need to speak on it. You need to tell somebody what's going on because, you know, these girls do not need to be abused. And that goes for boys as well because we know that boys get abused just as much.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody needs to speak up. Somebody needs to seek help, get some counseling, and you know, help that person to get away from that situation so they don't have to go through all the more abuse and violence down as they get older.
Right, and that's the thing. Tell someone, because when I was almost raped, when I was 13, I was living in Louisiana. I was almost raped. What had happened was I had a cousin, a girl cousin, and she knew this guy. I don't know what involvement she had with this guy, but she came by my mother's house one day, and she asked me if I wanted to go to the mall with them. And so I'm like, yeah, you know, let's go. And so I got in the car with them, and we went to the mall, and this guy, he bought a swimsuit. And he bought a swimsuit, and on the way home, he took my cousin home first, dropped her off first, and then with me, we stopped at his house. And then he told me to get out, come upstairs. He was going to go get something. But, you know, me, I didn't think, no, I'm going to stay here in the car. I didn't think that. I got out and went on up, you know, in the house. And I sat, I remember sitting on the couch, and there was another guy there. And he went in the back room, and then the guy got up and went in the back room, and the other guy came out, and he told me, he said, he wants you to come here. And so I got up, and I went back there, and he was standing in the room, and he closed the door behind me. And he sat me down on the bed. You know, he came up to me, walked up to me, and he put his hands on my shoulders, and he sat me down on the bed. Well, you know, I was shaking by then. And he laid down on top of me. And he told me if I screamed that he was going to kill me. No, he said he was going to hurt me if I screamed. And so I didn't scream, didn't say anything. I didn't even cry. But I remember he started pulling my pants down. And as he was pulling my pants down, I told him that I was on my period. And he still pulled my pants down anyway. And he saw the pad. And so he got up and he walked out the room. And so I got up and I pulled my clothes up and I just sat there on the bed. And he called me to the living room and he said, "You ready?" He just told me, "Come on, let's go." But if I had not been on my period, he would have raped me.
Wow.
You know, and I see God all over that, because you know there's a lot of times where guys wouldn't even care.
Exactly.
So if a girl was on their period or not.
Right.
You know, and even with that, you know, come to find, you know, this guy, he went to school with my mom. But because I was ashamed that had happened to me, I never told anybody. Nobody in my family didn't say anything to them until I was an adult. And until I began to write my book. When I started writing my book, that was like a release to me. It was really hard because I had to go back over in my mind a lot of things, everything that had happened that was suppressed for so long. You know, the pain of it, the shame of it, the guilt of it had been suppressed for so long. Nobody ever knew, you know, that had happened to me. I covered it up with other things, like makeup, you know, and you know, guys and money and, you know, and everything else. But I was so up, on the inside.
You know, and a lot of people walk around with masks on, you know.
Yeah.
Always trying to be somebody that they're not, or pretending that.
That's right.
You know, for a lot of people that did suffer through abuse and, you know, abandonment and different things, that mask just kind of helps you, I think, get through today. But, you know, someday, you know, you're going to wake up and remember all the things that you went through, and you're going to have to be able to get through it.
You're going to have to face it.
Others, for, you know, and like you said, you can't do it without God in your life. You can't
That's
do
right.
it without that forgiveness
right.
and all, and that real love, you know, from the man that will love you, you know, and that's Jesus.
Yeah. And you're going to have to face it. You're going to have to face your fears. And like you said, I like what you said, a lot of people walk around with masks on. That's the truth. You know, and until you face that fear, what it does is it causes you to be angry. It causes you to be stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with my children, I was very abusive to my children. And it wasn't anything that they had done. You know, it only took a little for them to make me mad. you know, and I just took my anger out on them. Even when I whooped them, you know, excessively because I was angry, because I was mad and I was frustrated, you know. It wasn't nothing that they had done. It was me.
Right.
Trying to deal with everything that, you know, I had been, everything that I had been through. I didn't know how to deal with it. But that was what was on the inside of me, rage, you know, and I turned to drugs to deal with that, to suppress it, you know, because I didn't want to deal with it. That's how we are today. You know, a lot of things that we can't face, things that we've been through in our life is too painful for us to deal with on our own. And so we'll turn to an alternative, you know, drugs or alcohol and other things that we have going on in our life. We'll turn to that, you know, because we don't want to face. We don't know how to deal with that kind of stuff. That's traumatic. A lot of things that people been through is just traumatic.
Right.
And you can't face it without God being in your life.
That's right. Yeah, when you were saying that, you know, becoming addicted to drugs or alcohol, it just kind of helps you escape or forget about, you know, everything that you've gone through.
Yep.
You know, I'm a nurse and I work on an ambulance and I transport patients, you know, a lot of sick patients usually from hospital to hospital or to a higher level of care. But we also transport a lot of teenagers. And I cannot believe how many young children and teenagers we are transporting because of depression or suicide or overdose. And I have to ask myself when I see these kids, you know, they're just such flat affects. And I you know, just wonder to myself, what in the heck have these kids gone through in their life to make them so depressed at 10 years old or 12 years old or 14 years old, you know, that they would want to take a handful of pills or that they want to commit suicide, you know, or cut themselves or, you know, I just, the devil has got so many people depressed. It's terrible.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And I just can't imagine, I mean, that's not what God had planned, and that's not God's plan for all these young kids to be depressed. And a lot of the prescription drugs that they have out today cause depression. I mean, antidepressants cause suicidal ideation. So, you know, a lot of these prescribed pills out here, just because they're prescribed and legal doesn't make them good and right. And people need to wake up and realize that, you know, pills don't cure everything. You need to come back to eating right and exercising and having God in your life and having, you know, your higher power and having, you know, positive thoughts. And you know, people depend too much on this stuff, and it's just killing people out here.
Yeah.
You know, but going back to the teenagers, I just, you know, I cannot understand how and why so many young, young people in our world are depressed and sick.
You know? Yeah, I think it's because I know it has a lot to do with Satan. We know that. We know that all that has to do with Satan. But they're looking for a way out. They've been hurt. I mean, you know, if you look at the people who are raising them, this is a generation where the grandparents are raising the kids.
Right.
You see, because the parents are strung out on dope or the parents are in prison.
Or
grandparents are old.
Or three jobs and can't be there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Them, too. Yep. Mm-hmm. Them especially. And,
yes.
You know, and the grandparents are too old to raise the kids.
Right.
You know,
and
they're
not
too old.
They're not out here either. So they're kind of maybe a little naive.
Exactly. They can't relate to anything that these kids are going through.
Right.
You know? But even the ones whose parents are on dope and whose parents are in the pen. And can you imagine how a kid feels? Man, my mama, my daddy is in the pen. You know, I never knew my daddy. You know, my mama, I grew up right thinking that this man here was my daddy. Come to find out he ain't my daddy.
Right.
I mean, you know, parents don't know the effect that has on children.
Right.
But it has a great effect. And it has a long-term effect. Okay, that's nothing short term. It has a long term effect on kids. These kids are looking for a way out of their problems. They don't know how to deal with the situations and the problems, and they're turning to drugs. They're taking these things, and they're getting depressed, and they're taking their lives. That's the way out. I don't think they really want to die. I think they just want a way out. But sometimes they lose their life in the process of trying to find that way out.
Right. We went to a hospital a few months ago to pick up, I think she was 14. These kids, a whole group of kids, went to a party, and this happens all the time. It's not anything new. They went to a party, and parents need to know what's going on out here, or grandparents need to know. You need to keep an eye on your prescription drugs, because these kids will get any drugs that you have, and they'll go, and everybody at the party will throw all the pills in a bowl like candy. And then you take a handful and see what happens to you. And they're hoping to get a high.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were two or three kids at this party that ended up on life support. And
wow.
We transported one of them to a trauma facility here in the Valley. And the parents were devastated. You know, here's a 14-year-old daughter who's normally healthy, you know, outgoing girl, gone to a party, you know, things went bad. She's sitting here in the hospital on life support. Who knows if she's going to come out of it or not? Who knows if her liver's shot or not, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, all the time, these kids are overdosing on Tylenol. But, you know, Tylenol is okay if you're taking one or two, but if you take a half a bottle, you're killing your liver, which, you know, you can go into liver failure and then respiratory failure and cardiac failure and on and on and on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely, you know, that's what we're here for, and we appreciate you coming and talking. You know, we're here to try to educate the youth. No matter if it's, you know, drugs, gangs, violence, you know, abuse, everything. You know, we want you to be healthy. We want you to succeed. We want you to get educated so that you can have a good life. You know,
right.
You don't have to, you know, you don't have to depend on other people. You can stand up on your own and make things work for you. But, you know, somebody, you know, it's the, you know, the parents are, I mean, we can't help everybody, but we can help somebody, and that's our, that's what we're trying to do. And we just appreciate you telling your story, because we know for a fact that so many women and young girls are going through the same thing that you went through every day. And for those that have, you know, we can help guide the ones that are going through it. For those that are going through it, maybe we can't stop it, but we can pray. We can pray every day.
Right.
Let these things stop. And on that, I'm going to hand the mic over to Rob, because he's sitting here so quiet and patient.
Okay.
Hey, Ms. Sims, back to you. You know, I'm just sitting here always vibing and just try to get the round full of the message. And, you know, when you do that, you can proceed with your speaking better. You know, and I'm definitely feeling your message, and I'm definitely, you know, praying and hoping that some young kid, older adult, definitely learn from the message that's out, because we all got a message. It's just if we want to tell it and share it. That's the bottom line at the end of the day.
Right.
You know? So we definitely appreciate that. And what we're going to do, we're going to go to the Streets Don't Love You Back song, and we're going to come right back with you, Ms. Sims, and you've been a great guest. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Ms. Sims. Streets Don't Love You Back.
What's up, what's up? This RB checking in with the Streets Don't Love You Back. The movement is on, baby!
Where's my purse?
Talking about that thug slash drug life.
Gosh, what a radio.
Let me tell you a little lesson, player. In these streets, baby, they'll never let you back. Trust me.
Know these streets, they don't love you, they don't love you.
Everybody's around here talking about all that thug life, player. Talking about that drug dealing thing. Tell you, baby, it's about getting your life together, getting your head on tight, doing something with your life, and stop destroying your community and stop destroying yourself, baby. So when the people come at you, they come for real, player. Homeboys on my team done got 400 million before, baby. 100 million, baby. Now they sitting on death row, baby. That's where you wanna be, player. Cause the drug game is washed up. The thug game is washed up, baby. They put it in our communities, baby, and they tell us off the top, yeah, you can make this, you can make that. But once they come for you, game over, lights out. Do what you feel, do what you wanna do, baby. But join the movement. It's the streets, baby. They don't love you back. It's the streets, baby. They don't love you back. Come on, come on.
In these streets, no one's above you. In these streets, no one can touch you. In these streets, love
yeah, yeah.
If you want.
This track here is a track of knowledge, you feel me? Want all young brothers and sisters across America to understand that the drug game, the thug life, that's all washed up right now. Take heed, learn from players that done live that life, you feel me? Much love to my man, the real freeway Ricky Ross. Jeff Step down May 4th, we sending you much love out there to Cali, you feel me? Much love to everybody across the state to state who roll with the movement. It's time to open your eyes up, people. It's time to rise up above all this street thing, you feel me? It's a better way. Let's do this.
It's moments like this when my back's against the fence that I say fuck the fence. Life is chess, I gotta go and get a bit. God, get caught up in moving. Shit, I'm strong. It started from my home, so I'm at home when pressure's on. We all alone when we born, we all alone when we die. We need to get our shit together. We can make it if we try. Can probably make it if you cry. But I hate it when you whine. And if all is true, it's up, and you can take it when you die. I'm on my grind, cause all I got is time. But maybe it's enough. But if it's not, then let me know. Cause I feel like I'm on bus. I'm overstuffed with propaganda. They should slander and lies, tried to slick the public and then wonder why there's crimes and murders on the rise, cause we ain't got a dime. Shit, I'ma hurt some fucking body, you can see it in my eyes. I lie awake sometimes at night and ponder how to get ahead, jump out of bed paranoid, I'm going backwards instead. Feel like my feet is full of lead, cause I just can't move, freestyle life off the head, cause I don't know what to do. I need to make a couple moves. Ooh, I need to make a couple moves. I need to make a couple moves, but I gotta stay free, cause each and everything I do and say affects my seed. Decide what's the truth, separated from fallacy. Separate what I want from the things that I need, and try to make a way for everything to be okay. Stay focused on my goals, so you never stray away. Let the past be the past, and your future's okay. Pay attention to the present, living in it every day. Come
let
on.
Let us all be checking back in with you, like I said. It's that trap of knowledge that you young brothers and sisters understand. That, hey, the street life, that's a dead issue, that's a dead game, that's all washed up. Let's get our life together, let's do what we need to do. Let's love more, hate none. RB, love, one. Much love to Lucinda, my manager, and my man LG. Let's do it. 100. Out.
Yes, indeed, and welcome right back here to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show, kicking it live with Miss Sims tonight. And we definitely, once again, like I said, hope everybody perceived the message from her tonight. And we definitely want you to keep in touch. Do you got a Facebook page they can keep in touch with you on, Miss Sims?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you can give them the information.
Oh, okay. It's just Sonya Sims at Facebook.com.
Okay, then. That's what's happening then. Any last announcements you would like to make?
Well, I just want to thank y'all for this opportunity to share my story. Like I say, you know, I always feel that any time I have the opportunity to share things that that I've been through, I try to do it for the glory of God. You know, I just don't believe that things happen. I mean, that things just happen by chance. I believe that everything happens for a reason, good, the bad, and the ugly. And that, you know, God can turn an ugly duckling into a beautiful swan. And so I just want to encourage, you know, the young ladies and even the young men. You know, you may have been through a hard time in your life. You may be going through a hard time in your life right now. But, you know, just keep in mind that your identity, you know, who you really are and not what you may be doing right now is not who you are. But, you know, your true identity is in Christ Jesus and that you do want to know the Lord and the pardon of your sins. And so and keep in mind also that God can always turn a ugly duckling into a beautiful swan. In other words, he can turn an ugly situation into a beautiful outcome.
Ain't no doubt. We loving that. So I'm gonna say a couple announcements tonight. And one announcement is that we have our second year anniversary coming up on the 29th of this month, and it's going to be our 100th show this month that's coming up, and we will have been on worldwide internet for 2 years, and we would like to let all the viewers, all the fans know that's going to be a special, special night, the 29th of June, and we're going to have none other than Mr. Phil Hall himself. He was a soldier in the crime families, real-life crime families. We ain't talking about CIN on TV, real life, you know. We will have also Mr. Brian Gambino from the Gambino crime family that will be here speaking live, living and in color. So we want all our fans to definitely tune in, learn a lot of knowledge. And at the end of that mission, that night, believe me, you will walk away from that interview thinking, if I'm doing any kind of wrong or I'm doing anything I ain't got no business doing, you're going to have a second look at what's happening. And God is going to give somebody a second chance that night, just like he's giving somebody a second chance tonight from Ms. Sims' testimony tonight. So definitely, June 29th. Live, living in color, Mr. Phil Hall and Mr. Brian Gambino will be here. So check them out on Facebook. Check them out on the Streets Don't Love You Back movement page. It's going down. It's going down. All right, Ms. Sims, we appreciate you tonight. And I'm going to pass the mic over to my missus. And much love to the whole Gambino family. And much love to Mr. Phil and his whole family and whole clique as well. And much love to Mr. Brian Siegelwald. Much love to the missus.
Thank you, too, sir.
Yeah.
Sonia, I just wanted to ask you before we left, did you say you were working on a book or you had already printed a book?
Miss Lucinda, to tell you the truth, I have started writing that book. What, how old is my daughter? 10 years ago. I have not completed that book because every time I put it down and pick it back up, it's like I'm starting all over again. I just have pages that I just haven't put together, and I'm just having, not that I'm having a hard time, but it's just that I have, you know, so much other things going on. I don't just have the time to just sit down and just, you know, write and finish. And then I'm thinking about, well, how can I get it published and how can I do this and do that? I just don't have all the pieces to it. But I've written the book. As far as I'm concerned, I've completed the book. I just haven't put it together yet. And I'm hoping to get mail.
I said, you lived that book.
Exactly. And I do believe that it's a God thing. And the book, is, you know, it's not even so much to make money off of it, but it's to help somebody else, because most of all, just even writing that book has helped me to heal. That was the first time I've ever told my story. It was through the ink on those pages. And as many times as I was writing it, I would just sit there and cry because, you know, in disbelief of the things that I've been through, not just that what I've been through, but that I survived it, you know, because I tell people when I talk about my story and my testimony, I tell people, you know, don't cry for me. This is not a sad story. You know, this is a story of victory. It's not a story of defeat because I'm still alive. I survived, you know, of all that stuff that I've been through, you know, and so... No, ma'am, I have not completed the book yet to answer your question.
Well, I encourage you. One of these days, you know.
Yes, ma'am, one of these days it'll be good and ready.
That's right. Well, you let me know when you do have it ready. I'll be the first to get one from you.
Okay.
Well, we just thank you for being here, and we know that, you know, and bless you and pray for you that you can go out and share your testimony, you know, wherever you are, and that you can reach out to the young women, you know, wherever you are, and touch their lives and touch their soul and touch their hearts and help them to be able to, you know, turn their life over to God and to be able to feel that they are loved and that they are beautiful and that they are cared for, and to help them get their self-esteem back that was, you know, taken away from them, you know, to help them feel that they can overcome and get away from the people that degrade them and put them down and treat them bad. And, you know, we just want to try to raise them up and help them to overcome and to just get away from all the wrong.
Yes, ma'am. I thank you too, Ms. Lucinda, and you and your husband for having me on tonight.
Thank you. We know that you're on our movement site, and you know, just put up postings, put up anything you want. You know, refer the site to people if you want. We do have our resource page up there with all our resources for, you know, from everything from gangs to drugs to abuse. So you know, just refer people there for resources if you want to. And then we're always here for you too if you ever need anything. And you know, we just, you know, we'll keep you in our prayers and keep you uplifted as you continue on your journey, because we know it's probably so hard sometimes, and we'll pray for your mom and your brother.
Thank you.
Just in love as well. And your children, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
We just Sonia, just say one last thing. Say something to the parents to help them to take care of their kids better. Just give them something.
Parents, love your kids. Love them unconditionally. One thing I've learned is that, you know, we really don't know how to love until we've embraced the love of Jesus Christ. That was, you know, another one of the things that kept me going was the false love. You know, and a lot of time, because we're, like I said, we're looking for stuff all the time. We're wanting to fit in. We're you know, we have this void, this empty void, and we're looking to fill this void, and which causes us to look for love in all the wrong places. And you know, until we embrace the love of Jesus Christ, we don't know how to love, because our love is conditional, but the love of Jesus Christ is unconditional. Parents, embrace the love of Jesus Christ so that you can embrace your children, so that you can love them like Jesus loves us unconditionally, no matter what they do, no matter what they've done, no matter who they are. Just continue to encourage your children, you know, accept them for who they are. Be a parent. That's all I have. Just love your children. Kids are so innocent. They're so innocent. You can hurt them and they'll still love you.
That's right.
Amen.
Well, I couldn't say it any better than that. So we thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing your life with us and with the world. And we just want everybody to tune in every Wednesday night with us here on Streets Don't Love You Back radio show, and join us 24/7 at our movement website, which is thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com. Or you can Google us, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and you'll find us all over the place. You know, please join us if you have a story that you'd like to share. Get with us and let us know about it. And definitely, definitely join us on the 29th, because it's going to be our hottest show ever. And a story of forgiveness and a story that you'll you just never imagine. So we'll join us at 29th. Again, that's a special show, not only because Phil and Brian are with us, but because it is our second year anniversary and our 100th show. We're going to go ahead and go out tonight with a song called Guide Us and Protect Us, and we'll join you back here next Wednesday night. Remember, the streets don't love you back. And
okay, and we just want to give a shout-out to Mr. Michael Franzi, and give a shout-out to Mr. Tony Knapp. Much love to all of y'all, and like the Mr. said, once again, 29th is our special show. That's our 100th show and our two-year anniversary, and we will have none other than Mr. Phil Hall and my man, Mr. Brian Gambino. Two soldiers, and we're looking forward to that date. God bless. Peace and love.
Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray. Yeah, the one who is there when no one has a care, I say, Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray. Yeah, and lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way. Lord, how precious your love and your grace and your counting days. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, now I shall repay. Yeah, with all of my strength I will fight with an iron fist. Lord, the freedoms of hate and the seed today don't exist. Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. With enemies close all around, I will call your name. Yeah, and slaughter the weak you quickly with no thought or shame. Lord, for my heart is firm in your hands, so I'm no disgrace. Lord, I'll hail up your name every day with a smiling face. Boy, I never can give enough praise for your tenderness. Lord, to be in your infinite grace is my happiness. Yeah, no matter the time or the place, you're omnipotent. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, so I shall repent. Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. Yeah, we tried the long rocky road. The buffalo soldier fights the power freedom war. The last we step on the throne. The conquering disciples burn your congregation. Yeah. Collect your security. We build a better nation. Time beside the unity. Say nothing and fight, nothing and war. But brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes. Live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering, see so much petty things. We're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love. So I will always try to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray. Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.